Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. Welcome back, crew, to another episode of the Cryptoconomy Podcast. I'm hitting you today with part three of Laurent MT's four-part series on Bitcoin's proof of work. If you have not listened to part one and two, what the hell are you doing with your life? Go back, listen to Quick Read 151 and 152. This will be 153. And we will be hitting part four tomorrow. So you might be a little bit lost if you have not caught up with the previous two episodes. But without further ado, we've already been getting into this, so we're just going to jump right into part three, titled Cliffhangers. Quote, "Be like the cliff against which the waves continually break, but it stands firm and tames the fury of the water around it." End quote. Marcus Rocky Aurelius, Meditations of a Bitcoin Miner. In the previous parts of this series, we've started to investigate the efficiency of Bitcoin's proof of work. In this third part, we're going to focus on a slightly different question. Is the system running at its optimum? For this, we'll first underline some points related to the effects of an increasing hash rate, and we'll introduce the Satoshi's Cliff, a 3D visualization illustrating the diminishing marginal security provided by older blocks. Then, we'll define what could be considered as the theoretical optimum of the system, and we'll wonder how far is the system from this optimum. At last, we will conclude with a few thoughts about the diverging paths followed by Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. Prologue: Bitcoin Steroid and Bitcoin Arctic. We've previously discussed the influence of holding over the efficiency of Bitcoin's proof of work by imagining two hypothetical versions of Bitcoin. While caricatural, these two examples were useful for understanding the consequences of different trade-offs. Bitcoin Steroid sacrifices its efficiency for a maximized activity, while Bitcoin Arctic sacrifices its activity for a maximized efficiency. Obviously, none of these solutions is very satisfying. Can we do better? Satoshi's Cliff. When I began to study the Bitcoin protocol, I was first amazed by the idea of new proof of works piling on top of old ones and providing an ever-increasing security. But as often with Bitcoin, things aren't as simple as they seem. The truth is that with an increasing efficiency and availability of mining hardware, the security provided by old individual proof-of-works tends to decrease. This phenomenon can be illustrated with the statistics provided by Peter Wella on this page. The chart displays the number of days which would be required for recomputing all proof-of-works since day one, with 100% of the actual hash rate. In order to better visualize the evolution of the two phenomena, i.e. the cumulative effect of proof-of-work and the effect of an increasing hash rate on old blocks, we're going to compute a 3D visualization generalizing the chart provided by Peter Wella. This visualization is going to display how many days on the z-axis would be required to rewrite the history back to a past block, the y-axis, with 100% of the expected hash rate used to mine a more recent block, x-axis. I'll call this the Satoshi's Cliff. Begin chart. Unfortunately, I'm going to butcher this one if I attempt to explain what I'm looking at. 2D charts are hard enough. So this time I'm just going to encourage you to go check it out. I mean, he goes through exactly what's happening, or at least what we're seeing in this chart in the rest of the article anyway. But if you would like to see the visualization, I think it is very helpful. So I just encourage you to go back and check out the article either at the end of this or while you're listening to it if you have that available to you. End chart. Let's choose any value on the x-axis and start from the bottom. Let's climb the cliff. As you can see, rewriting more blocks requires more and more time and is more expensive. But at some point, we reach a plateau. Being older doesn't provide a significant additional security to a UTXO. This highlights why the approach followed by Bitcoin Arctic, i.e. the naive maximization of accumulated proof-of-works, is not optimal. Once the plateau has been reached, activity is sacrificed for almost no additional security. On the edge of the cliff. Based on this observation, we're going to define the edge of the cliff as a theoretical optimum for the system. Indeed, beyond a certain point, it doesn't seem very wise to sacrifice activity for the diminishing marginal security provided by older proof-of-works. It's important to note that the concept of an optimal age doesn't really make sense for an individual UTXO. Indeed, as the quote owner of a UTXO, you don't have a fine-grained control over its age. Either you hold the UTXO and at some point it will reach the plateau, or you spend it and it instantly goes back to the bottom of the cliff. In my opinion, this concept of optimal age is primarily useful when we consider the UTXO set as a whole. It can be considered as a reference point for the distribution of existing Bitcoins per age. The more existing Bitcoins are concentrated around the optimal age, the closer the system is from its optimum. Okay, let's try to determine the evolution of this optimal age. For this, we're going to iterate over all the values on the x-axis and plot a two-dimensional chart for each value, a kind of transverse slice of the cliff. Begin chart. So the chart starts with, it's the entire number of days required to rewrite the history back to any specific block. And you notice that all the way from the Genesis block to block 300,000 and a little bit later, it's almost consistent. Rewriting back to block 300,000 almost costs the same amount of money or negligible difference to rewrite all the way back to the Genesis block. So, and then as you move forward, you begin to see the increased costs around 400,000. And then finally the cliff happens between 400 and 500,000 in the blocks. So going by this chart, the cliff happens about 100,000 blocks deep currently. So if you have a UTXO that is over 100,000 blocks deep, is not really gaining any security anymore. Whereas for the first few blocks, block 1 to 10 to 100 to 1,000, you're increasing the security phenomenally during that period until you pass the cliff edge, which is labeled on this chart, at about 100,000 blocks deep. End chart. Then we're going to use a very simple method based on vector arithmetic, CNXA, in order to approximate the optimal age for the slice. We just have to repeat the same operation for each slice, and that gives us the following chart. Begin chart. Here we have a range from originating all the way from the Genesis block of the optimal age, the peak or optimal security that can be achieved from a UTXO based on how long it has been in the blockchain. And the first thing you'll notice is it's pretty volatile and ranges anywhere from 200 to 700 or 800 days as the optimal security. End chart. Let's note that very different criteria might be used to determine what is the optimum at a given date. Which one is best remains an open question. A lemming effect? You may remember some observations made about the HODL waves, which suggest a, quote, lemmings effect occurring during rallies in the Bitcoin's price, with many old UTXOs jumping from the cliff. As it was shown earlier, one of the consequences of this phenomenon, coupled with the increasing hash rate, is a temporary degradation of the efficiency of the system. Does it mean that the system is significantly moving away from our theoretical optimum during these events? As a first benchmark, we can try to use a few data points provided by the HODL waves analysis and plot the distribution of UTXO amounts per age. The selected data points will be the last four top and bottom values identified for the price performance ratio. We will then plot an interval identifying the position of the optimal age on top of these distributions. Begin graphic. This one again is going to be really difficult to explain, so I encourage you to check it out, but it's a color-coded and showing the optimal range of days basically for a UTXO based on certain dates. So around July 7th, 2012, our optimum days are around 400. And he shows the same small graphic for like six or seven other dates picked from Bitcoin's history. And the caption reads, distribution of existing Bitcoins per age. Selected data points are the last four top and bottom values of the price performance ratio. End graphic. We can observe that for most of these data points, a majority of the existing Bitcoins, 50 to 70%, are hanging on the cliff, i.e. below the optimum. But an indicator more important than the median is the concentration of existing Bitcoins around the optimum. I must admit that I've been a bit surprised here. I was expecting a clear differentiation between the bottoms, July 7th, 2012, to January 31st, 2013, etc., and the tops, September 21st, 2012, and November 16th, 2013, etc. But it doesn't seem to be the case. To be honest, I don't think that we can infer anything definitive from so few data points. Unfortunately, I lacked time for computing an exhaustive, fine-grained comparison, and it remains a task to be done. Yep, it's a really brutal cliffhanger. Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. As a last thought on this subject, I'll say that it should be interesting to observe how Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash evolve in the future. As you certainly noticed, the trade-offs described for Bitcoin Arctic and Bitcoin Steroid have some resemblances with divergent visions followed by the two chains. Concerning Bitcoin, it should be particularly interesting to observe how the Lightning Network impacts the efficiency of the system. Indeed, the idea of long-lived channels, i.e. several months or years, may help to naturally aggregate more UTXOs around the optimum, which is currently oscillating between 18 and 24 months. Concerning Bitcoin Cash, it should be interesting to observe if the effect of an ever-increasing number of on-chain payments can be counterbalanced by holders, and if it's enough to stay close from an optimal use of the security provided by its proofs of work. Conclusion. In this third part, we've discussed the idea of an optimal age of the UTXOs, allowing to measure how far the system is running from its optimum. It's clear that this post has barely scratched the surface of the question. My hope is that this first foray into the subject will encourage more people to investigate it. All right, and there we have part three, cliffhangers. And it's, like I said in the last two, this has been a really, really good series, and I hope somebody takes this and runs with it to try to figure out. I like the idea of an optimum age because it's interesting to see how steep the cliff is, because you think about it, we're talking about the ability to undo, and this is a chart by made available by Peter Weller, but we're talking about how much time it would take to undo the entire Bitcoin network if 100% of the hash power was dedicated to doing so. And it's interesting to see that after the first 198 190 some days, it is literally only a few more days to undo the other 75% of the history. I mean, not that any of this is an easy task. Returning or reversing one block is a mountain of trouble in and of itself, but it's just really fascinating to see that the hash power is being added so quickly to the network and it's growing so fast that older hashes protecting older UTXOs aren't really doing much anymore. After you go back a full year in the blockchain, the hashes are so small in number in comparison to just, you know, one block in a year out for the growth of the hash rate, it's almost negligible to the new hardware on the system. But I think we should see that change as time moves on, because we're going to reach a point where the hardware is not, the efficiency of the hardware is not doubling every year. The massive amount of growth will finally level out at some point. And then in addition, we will have a shift when the third economic era, as we read in the three economic eras of Bitcoin, finally comes about, and fees for transactions become the dominant funding for Bitcoin miners, which will really change the dynamics underlying the system. So when there is no reward, the need for activity on the network will basically keep the thing alive. Like, so if people are not using it, there will be no incentive to secure it. So that will be an interesting new dynamic, and it'll be exciting to see how all of that plays out and how equilibrium is found in the system when we reach that third economic era of Bitcoin. So with that, I will close this here. I don't want to go too much into it. We want to go ahead and hit part four. Don't forget to follow Laurent MT. That's at Laurent, LaurentMT on Twitter. And of course, I will link, tag, do all that great stuff in the post as always. Be sure to go back and listen to part one and part two. And we will be back tomorrow for part four. Don't forget to follow me at The Crypto Economy on Bitcoin, BitcoinHackers.org, instance of Mastodon, Twitter, and Medium. Same tag at The Crypto Economy. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Share it with all of your friends. And if you are getting value out of this, sharing is a great way to help out the show a little bit. You can leave a review on iTunes. That's also a huge help. You can donate to my Bitcoin address, or you can use my affiliate link to purchase your Trezor hardware wallet, and it'll send a couple of bucks my way without any cost to you. Thank you guys so much for everyone who has helped out with the show. Thank you for listening. I hope you guys are enjoying this as much as I am, and I will keep it coming with another episode tomorrow. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. Stay tuned. All right, guys. Catch you all tomorrow.